WVUA-FM, Tuscaloosa.
The Capstone. This is the morning show. Hello, my name is Noah. I'm usually not here on the morning show on Fridays. Usually it's hosted here by
Summer Scroggins
and our two lovely co-hosts right here. Go ahead and introduce yourself.
I'm Ian Schwartz.
And I'm Ryan Cagle.
And Ryan is new on the morning show. Let's give it up for Ryan. Woo! Here on the morning show. So Ryan is going to be here next week and in the coming weeks and everything. I'm here just special today. We are this hour and today is Holocaust Memorial Day, and so in honor of that and in response to some of the recent events here on campus, some of the anti-Semitic rhetoric, the chalkings that we saw yesterday. Crimson White has a great article about that to get up to date on all that was going on with that. We are having some voices to come in and talk to us. So we have several guests lined up this 8 o'clock hour to talk to us. And the first set guest that we have in the studio is Professor Levine from the Department of Religious Studies, and so Chair of Judaic Studies. Is that right?
There's the Judaic Studies minor, which the department runs, and then there's, but I'm also like one of the professors, myself and my senior colleague, Dr. Steve Jacobs, who teaches an excellent class on anti-Semitism and its history, and is kind of a world-renowned expert, so like definitely take it if you have harder questions than I can answer.
Exactly. So, and Professor, if you'll get right up on that mic, we'll make it.
Yeah, sure.
Awesome. We have some questions that we're going to be asking today. We're just going to be going around and asking you a little bit of what we have on our minds. So first, to just get to know you a little bit, what is your background in the Jewish community?
I came to UA in, 2012, and I teach in, you mentioned I'm religious studies, and I'm there part-time, and I'm in political science for the other part of the time. And I was teaching political science for about 10 years, and about 3 years ago, I was asked because my research sort of changed to I studied the Israel-Palestine conflict and political violence, and some of that, as y'all may know from the newspapers, I think people talk about the Israel-Palestine conflict a little bit, right? Mm-hmm. So, religion is sort of important in that conflict, turns out. Like, I know, it's a surprise. So once my work started to follow that more closely, so that I sort of split between the two. And, being part of the Jewish community, like, that was, I was born that way, right?
Yeah. So, how did you first find out about the chalkings and such?
I think through the Crimson White, actually. And someone texted me and asked me if I like what I thought. Former student was like, "Hey, sorry this happened," and I was like, "Oh, something happened." Okay, and so that was the, that was that.
Yeah.
So what support can people, Jewish or non-Jewish, give in reaction to something like this?
That's a great question. Thanks. I mean, I guess like the thing about chalkings like this is they're not, I mean, speaking for myself, and I'm sort of speaking now not like as the guy who studies this for a living, but as just sort of someone who shares this community, right? Mm-hmm. And therefore I can only speak really for my own self. I was born in like the late 1970s, right? So I'm not surprised that there are people that think things like this. Mm-hmm. I might be a little bit surprised that people sort of say them out, but then like this person isn't really saying them out loud. They're kind of writing them like in the dark of night and chalk and then running like hell. If you've been born since 1945, like the fact that anti-Semitism is a thing is not really a surprise. And if you've lived in Alabama for any length of time, you know that like there are people who think all sorts of things that you wish they didn't. But that's not everybody. It sort of depends on the person, right? The real thing with this is it doesn't have, in that sense, I don't feel like it has much to do with me. It has to do with my colleagues, my students, all the people who are adjacent to Jewish people but aren't themselves, right? Mm-hmm. So like the person who chalked this chalked it because they figured that Bama would be like a good, soft place to test out, like to dip their toe in the water, and mm-hmm. they're betting that everybody around me that I know, work with, care about, that isn't Jewish is going to look at this and go like, oh yeah, well, what are you going to do? And the next time they'll dip their toe in a little more and a little more. For us, like for me, I'm like, well, yeah, I mean, I knew there were such folk. It's like the guy in the back row of class who makes the joke that's deniably a joke and deniably racist or deniably, right, misogynist. And then just to see what the prop's going to do, just to see where the water is. And so, you know, question for you guys, not for you guys in particular, but like question for the campus community is like, were the guys who did that chalking, were they right? Like, are we as a community, like, are we okay with this? Or are we going to say like, no, we're not. And that's, but I think for myself, like, I don't know anything that I didn't know yesterday. And I'm not like, I'm not sadder than I was yesterday. Like, this is not, I mean, it's not great news, but it's not a surprise.
Yeah.
So what was, so I know you said that it wasn't a surprise to you, but whenever you, what was your initial reaction whenever you saw that Crimson White article, whenever you saw what was happening, what was going through your head, what was your first thought?
My first thought, I guess my first thought was like, you know, this was going to happen sooner or later. And
I'm interested about that. What do you mean? This was going to happen sooner or later. Why do you think that?
Well, I mean, we are that thing of testing the water, right? And let's say this. So if you're into global politics, and you know, like I kind of do this for a living, right? So there was a guy maybe 5-6 years ago in France named Dieudonné, sort of like a Kanye West, right? In his case, stand-up comedian, right? Does a sort of edgy kind of comedy, right? And starts folding like anti-Semitic rhetoric into some of the stand-up routine. And again, it's supposed to. There's a moment where like pushing against some of the hypocrisies of French society around the Holocaust and the double standard between the Holocaust and other forms of violence that the French state's involved in, like, it turns into a sort of joke. And part of the joke is pointing out the hypocrisy, but part of the joke is also dehumanizing people who really were victims of a thing and playing that against the one against the other. And that game is a rhetorical game that works kind of well, right? Making it look edgy. So if it works, you should expect to see it reproduce itself. Like, right? So, like, if you want to know how a certain kind of populism works, you shouldn't be surprised if Silvio Berlusconi, who's been on reality TV shows for 15 years, and President Trump both use similar rhetorical tropes. You might like that, you might not like it, but you shouldn't be surprised that you're seeing it. And then you'll go like, oh, yeah, so if I see it here and then I see it there, I'm like, yeah, well, it works. And there is similarly, in the U.S., like, we are also asking, there are questions about double standards that we do want to ask, and there are smart ways of asking them.
So going off of, like,
sorry,
what you said. No, you're fine. I didn't mean to interrupt
you. No, you're good. You're the host. Like, it's your show. Like, it's
but
your show. Yeah.
I was just wondering, like, what do you think specifically about the University of Alabama is something that people would want to say these things? Or that's not really how I wanted to ask the question, but like,
but why do they think here and not,
yeah,
you know,
why are they
Berkeley
comfortable doing it here?
Well, right, because there is a sort of, because there's a very particular way that Alabama figures into the national story, and that way is not terribly sophisticated, and it doesn't make much. Like, and they may or may not know that, like, the UA of 1950 is not the UA of 2022, even though the UA of 2022, 23 also has its work to do. Like, let's be sure.
Yes.
Yeah.
But, like, and so I think, because much of the politics that we see around very deep red states is a politics around resentment about things which you supposedly can't say. And that kind of edgy rhetoric, it's playing around these things that you can't say, or supposedly can't say. Mm-hmm. In point of fact, like, come take my Israel Palestine class, I promise you, we will talk a lot about Palestinian suffering, because there's a lot of Palestinian suffering to talk about, right? It's, and And we will have to do it in a way that doesn't dehumanize the victims of a genocide, even if some of the victims of that genocide are some of the people that took part in the ethnic cleansing of Palestine. Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. And like the fact that that is difficult to talk about, the fact that it is difficult to look each of those pieces in the face and not turn away from them and not fold into something lazy and stupid, that's hard for everybody.
Yeah. Yeah.
I wanted to ask a little bit about the having these hard conversations. I know a big part of all these conversations happen is online, through social media. I found out through about what was going on through Instagram, through GroupMe, that this had happened in the first place. I never saw the chalkings myself, but I found out about them through these things going on. These conversations are happening on social media. But, I mean, social media is a hard place to have tough, nuanced conversations about things like this. What have you seen as far as not only the reaction of how people talk about this, but also how social media has affected like the dissemination of these ideas in the past 10, 15 years?
So like, this is going to sound like a weird tangent, but bear with me for like 2 seconds, and then just like interrupt me if I forget to like actually answer your question, right? So there was this guy named Martin Luther who was really, really mad at the church. Thought the church was corrupt, did a bunch of things wrong, and like starts writing all this stuff about how we could do religion differently and how like how the church needs to change. And he can disseminate those ideas in a new way because there's this thing called like the printing press. It uses paper, which is super cheap. It uses movable type, which is super cheap compared to like, you know, handwritten scrolls in vellum written by monks that no one else knows how to read. Kind of like compared to that, it's crazy easy to print it, produce it, disseminate it. It's crazy cheap. And it's much easier to read. And so and there are people learning how to read in really large numbers. And so in that moment, a whole bunch of new forms emerge, which are now like the things we take for granted, tragedies, comedies, Shakespeare, all the plot lines that we take for granted, all the forms and genres, we take those for granted. They begin, right? Similar with radio, similar with TV, right? So like Twitter, Insta, that's a new printing press, right? And so it's a printing press that has a particular form. It's heavy on images, it's light on text. It favors visual representation. It favors particular kinds of emotional reaction rather than reasoned response. And just like people are figuring out like, so like before The Sopranos, it was like, holy, you can make TV that's that good on TV. Like no one knew you could stretch TV. So now we're kind of stretching these new forms this way. And some of the people that are doing that are really nice, interesting, creative people who have really cool ideas. And some of them are like D.W. Griffiths with Birth of a Nation, who's like inventing a whole new kind of film to serve like a really awful, racist, reactionary, terrible cause. Mm-hmm. But like, and the fact that the dude's like a film genius and the fact that the dude's like a crazy racist, like, and you're like, well, how can that be? And it's like, you know, I mean, Wagner was the best composer of his generation. He was also a crazy racist, right? Like, so that's what we're seeing with those forms, right? Is people are experimenting, and some of the people who are experimenting that are and are great at it are also, like, you know, really awful human beings, right? But they're also, like, you know, like Louis C.K. is really, really funny, but also, like, but also really not. Yeah. And so then you have to just sort of decide, like, what are you... But we shouldn't be surprised by that. That happens all the time.
Yeah. So I guess my next question would be, sorry, give me 1 second.
Yeah, no worries.
So as like a non-Jewish person, I saw the chalking like outside of Houston Hall yesterday. I was walking to work. I had something to do in Bryant-Denny Stadium, and I saw one of the chalkings. I couldn't stop and do anything. But like as a non-Jewish person, what could I have done to like support the community and just stuff like that?
I think in that moment, you know, just that you, the fact that you saw that and reflected that way is like a, you know, it speaks well of you, right? Because I think a lot of times, and I know, you know, and I've had similar conversations with colleagues from other groups that sometimes experience different kinds of minoritization, right? Like, there's that feeling that like, wow, okay, so no one but us is gonna care about this. And the whole, what is isolating about that is that feeling that like you're gonna be peeled off. Like, so in that sense, like if you've got friends who are part of that community. And like, even if when you say like, hey, are you doing all right? Like, you just check in with them that way. Even if they're like, oh yeah, whatever. Like, even if they kind of laugh it off, my guess is part of them is going to appreciate that you asked, you know? And I think the other thing that folks can do is they can, we can resist, I'm going to sound like Yoda, right? But we can resist like the dark side, right? It's cheaper, quicker, more seductive, right? Like, if it feels really satisfying, but sort of reductive, like the moment when you're like, okay, who do I get to throw under the bus today for the thing that I saw on Insta that pissed me off, right? Like, yeah. The thing is, you don't get to throw anybody under the bus, right? And like I said before, right? Like, when I checked the Twitter response to all that stuff, all the responses were like, okay, but like, nobody was actually hurt, and like, all these people were hurt in Palestine last week, right? And it's like, yeah, you know what? There's a lot that's wrong with that response, but like I said before, like, the solution to, like, we are equally obliged to take on the full humanity of Palestinian suffering and the imperative to address it and to address this, and nobody gets to be thrown under the bus for that. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a hard thing to do, because it'll mean different things in different places. In a certain class, it'll mean this. When you're a journalist, it'll mean that. When you're in an office space, it'll mean this. When you're on a date, it's going to mean, if that's still a word that people use, like, it's going to mean that, right? But like, but that's that sensibility, and I think it, you know, that's that sensibility, and I think that's the thing. That would be my answer. It's not a very good answer, maybe, but it's not as focused an answer as I'd like, but it's the answer I've got.
It's okay. But just to kind of wrap things up,
yeah, sure.
One last question. Like, what support, I'm so sorry. As non-Jewish people, how should we react to criticism of the Jewish community without being anti-Semitic ourselves?
That is a really tough question, right? And like, I get it every year in class, and I wish I had an answer for it. Here's why. Like, so I'll get students like, okay, so what's legitimate criticism of Israel, right, on the one hand, or legitimate criticism of things that Jewish people do, right, on the one hand, and anti-Semitism on the other? And the answer is that, like, even within the Jewish community, there's disagreement about that, just like there's disagreement within the Black community, just like there's disagreement among feminists, just like there's disagreement in LGBTQ circles. It sort of depends on what form of life you think Jewishness is, right? Okay. Like, so the guys who were doing Zionism in the 40s basically said, if we don't have a sovereign state and our own army, we're doomed. Now, that argument is neither right nor wrong at the outset. It's a prediction about the future. It's like Machiavelli. And so it's a question of judgment. It might be right or it might be wrong. A lot of Jews think it's wrong and a lot of Jews think it's right. And so there's no, but then if you then say like, okay, well, there shouldn't be an Israeli state. If you think that, you're going to hear that as anti-Semitic. Mm-hmm. If you don't, you won't. And so understanding that that will be an argument, but that it can be an honest argument, a decent argument, and not automatically a racist argument, and knowing how to negotiate that both from within the community and from outside of it, that's the skill set that we don't have. Both, not just around Jewish difference, but around race, around, yeah. That's the skill set that your generation is figuring out and teaching us.
Exactly. All right. And we appreciate you having this conversation with us this morning to help us talk about these things and figure out how to talk about these topics in a way that is helpful to all of us. So
I mean, you guys are teaching us, really. Like, it's the truth, right? Because, like I said, that form of creating those new instances and all that, like, I'm 50. I'm still going to write on the computer I got from, like, 1985. I'm always going to write that way. You guys are the ones who are... You are remaking that the way that my generation was remade on videotape.
Mm-hmm. Awesome, awesome.
So you're teaching us.
Well, Professor Levine, thank you so much for being in the studio with us today.
My pleasure.
We'll stay in touch. Hope to hear from you soon.
Thank you, guys.
Awesome, awesome. We'll be back in a minute to talk to Carter Miller, the student organization leader of UA Chabad. Don't go away.
WVUA-FM, Tuscaloosa.
This is the morning show here on 90.7 The Capstone, recognizing Holocaust Memorial Day, and then also reacting to the recent events, the recent anti-Semitic chalkings that appeared on campus yesterday. And so we've been talking to different voices from the Jewish community, and in this segment we have Carter Miller from UA Chabad here on to talk to us, and student organization, student leader of that organization. Can you tell us a little bit more about your background in the Jewish community, your involvement with UA Chabad?
So I actually grew up Christian, but I figured out about my Judaism due to family heritage back in like 2020. And since then, I've been like heavily involved trying to get more like in touch with my identity. Chabad has been great. I love my rabbi and I love all the students in it. And it was a good learning experience. I attended some classes with the rabbi and went on a New York City trip and all that stuff. It's actually where I got this Yankee cap. Yeah, this year I decided to run for the executive board and ran for president as well. So that's what I do. So I'm, it's really more of a paperwork job, but I get to represent the students and come on and do stuff like this. So it's really cool. So,
how did you find out about the chalkings? What was your initial reaction to them?
So I woke up at about 8 a.m. yesterday, and I had a Snapchat from one of the guys on the board, and he was just like, "Hey, man, this has just appeared on campus or whatever. This is not okay." Then I saw it on someone else's story, and I was like, "Okay, so I've seen two of them. So that's pretty bad." But and I let the board know and everything. I texted a rabbi and stuff, but I didn't think there would be so many. So my initial reaction was, you know, just wow, like I don't know, there were so many. It was just incredible. It's a lot of effort.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Whenever you see something like that, and something to the degree that it's you see one, you see a second one, you see multiple, it's a pattern. How does that make you feel? What does that make you think of? What has been your experiences with something like this in the past? Like, what does that make you recall or bring up?
For me, I haven't been, comfortable in my Judaism for long enough to go through heavy anti-Semitic attacks. And I think anyone our age, especially at the UA, hasn't been in an environment where they get harassed. But there have been some. I have talked to some students who have been harassed before, but they're just, you know, they're kids. So, you know, it's, but my reaction, initial reaction was anger, frustration, just borderline curiosity as to why something like that would be put on our campus, why it was allowed in the first place. But I think it was done in the dead of night, so I don't think it was monitored, obviously. But I was angry beyond words yesterday morning, trying to get everything set up to go to the quad yesterday and stuff like that, and start a little, like, I guess, peaceful protest. So
tell us more about UA Chabad. Or Chabad, I'm so sorry.
No, it's okay.
For those of us that may not know what it is or anything like that.
So Chabad is an organization that specializes in outreach to the Jewish communities. It's not just a student thing. It exists on its own and is a program. It's been around for, I think, since 1775. And it's just Jewish outreach to any community. So there's Chabad houses all over the place. Like there's a Chabad house in Taiwan, stuff like that. It just reaches Jews. But here at the UA, it's just a student organization run by a rabbi and a rebbetzin. And they're obviously married and have a kid. And they cook home cooked meals. We have like Chabad dinners, celebrate the holidays, that kind of thing. And it's the more, I would say, traditional form of Jewish life on campus. Like it heavily dives into like kind of, I don't want to say Orthodox, but like the more traditional side of like observance and that kind of thing. So yeah.
So going off that, like what do you do to coordinate something in reaction to the chalkings, and what do you have planned?
So officially, tonight we're having a Unity Shabbos, which is just a dinner at the rabbi's house, like usual. But it's obviously celebrating, or not celebrating, but remembering Holocaust Remembrance Day. And, you know, that was going to happen regardless, but now it's like there's extra fire behind it, I guess, if that makes sense. But yesterday we spontaneously just set up our table on the quad and just wrapped tefillin and kind of set up like a little, not a peaceful protest. I hate using that because, like, it wasn't really a protest. It was more of just a gathering. I mean, like, there were like 14 Jews there at a time, and just like standing in the quad and, like, you know, like making sure, like, people saw us and knew we were there. So,
yeah. So how does something like this affect you and your peers as people who are still becoming adults or growing in their faith?
To be honest with you, it depends on the person. But for me, it just reassures the fact that I know people out there, you know, hate us for no reason, almost. I mean, the reasons that they have are very loose, but it doesn't sway me at all, personally. I know some people that are scared to be Jews on campus, and I feel for them, and I hope that they can be more comfortable and more reassured that the reaction from the campus and the organizations, kind of helped them figure out, you know, maybe this isn't so scary, I guess.
And in response to that, what support can people, whether they're Jewish or non-Jewish, give in reaction to something like this, or just on a day-to-day level? How can we support you?
So generally, I would say there's not anything like. Like, some guy walked up to our table at the quad yesterday and was like, hey, is there anything I can sign to, like, support you guys? Honestly, just making sure that this kind of anti-Semitism doesn't fly or go unchecked, you know, that kind of thing. And then, obviously, we have donations to Chabad and stuff like that. Like, Sammy, Sigma Alpha Mu, donated $500 yesterday to Chabad in response to everything. So that was great. Thank you, guys. So stuff like that, just like little stuff too, like, you know, making sure that, like, if you do see any anti-Semitism, like, being acted out physically, you know, react to it, you know, not in a bad way, but, like, you know, make sure that people know, like, hey, there are Jews on this campus and they're loud and proud. So this is not going to stand here. So,
yeah.
Well, as we're sort of wrapping up here, thank you so much for talking to us. But is there anything else? I know we've had a lot of questions. Is there anything else that we haven't covered yet that you'd like to add, that you'd like to say to our audience listening while you have this platform?
I generally want people to understand that regardless of all this anti-Semitism, the Jews at Alabama are not swayed, and they're not scared, not intimidated, and we're stronger than ever. And I saw more Jews come together yesterday and more people come together than I have on this campus in a long time, in my time being here. So honestly, we turned a horrible morning into a beautiful day, and I want people to remember the positive things that happened yesterday, not just the negative.
That's great. And tell us one more time about the event going on tonight.
Tonight is Unity Shabbos at Chabad in Alabama. You can look up the information on their website or just a quick Google search.
Awesome. Thank you. Thank you again, Carter Miller, for being in the studio with us today and talking to us about this.
Absolutely.
Awesome. All right. We'll be back in a moment here on 90.7 WVUA, The Morning Show. We're going to be talking to Lisa Besnoy of Bama Hillel. So don't go away.
WVUA-FM, Tuscaloosa.
Hello, guys. Welcome to The Morning Show.
I've got Lisa Besnoy on the line right now. Lisa, can you say hi for us, and let's do an audio check here.
Yeah, hi, everybody. Good morning.
Awesome. Lisa, thanks again for joining us here, remotely in the studio.
Yes, I appreciate you working me in today.
Awesome. So Lisa Besnoy is the executive director of Bama Hillel. Does that sound right?
That is correct, yes.
Awesome, awesome. So that's a good way of putting your position and everything. Can you start off by just telling us a little bit about you, a little bit about your background in the Jewish community?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I am the executive director of Bama Hillel. It's a Jewish student center on campus. We've been part of the campus community since 1934 and just a home away from home for Jewish students and our community and alumni. And so, you know, we're very happy to be here to speak with you today. I'm actually an alumni of the University of Alabama as well. I went to school here in the 90s. I grew up in Montgomery, Alabama. My whole family is Jewish, and so have really had an experience here in Alabama and a positive experience at the university that I've been so happy to come back to as an adult and a Jewish professional to help provide the same safety.
So what's your current involvement in the Jewish community on the University of Alabama's campus?
Yeah, well, I run the Jewish Student Center, and so I am involved daily with our students, with our campus community. One of the things that I love about in around 2010, 2011, that Hillel and Temple Emmanuel in Tuscaloosa created, with the help of the university, what I call a little Jewish campus. So if you've been to the Bloom Hillel building on campus, just adjacent through that we share a courtyard is Temple Emmanuel. And that is a community synagogue. And we have families there who have been in Tuscaloosa for 100 years to faculty and staff and family and little kids. That come together to provide access to the greater Tuscaloosa community. And so we have our student center right next door to another Jewish hub, and it really allows us to come together as a community as opposed to separating the two, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
So in recent light of certain anti-Semitic events around campus, how did you find out about those chalkings and what was your initial reaction?
Yeah, first of all, I want to thank y'all for hosting the show today. I know that, assuming that you're a student, sometimes these are hard questions to ask, and just talking about it and getting more information, how we educate each other is how we heal each other. So I really appreciate your taking the time to do this today. We're very student-facing. Again, we're our Hillel is open almost every day of the week. And so first thing in the morning, I started receiving texts from students who were walking to class and seeing the chalkings, sending me pictures. And so from very early on, I was in communication with students and parents and minutes later with the university administration to start working together to help create a response to the talking.
Definitely.
Are there any experiences with things like this in the past that you've seen, and what are your thoughts on them?
Right. So if you're asking about, again, talking from my personal experience, the University of Alabama is really an amazing place in terms of not seeing this type of activity very often. So I was a student here in the 90s. I've been back as the Hillel director for 10, 11 years. And this campus is really supportive of our Jewish group and identity. So we don't see this very often. I can tell you in the times that we have seen it, the university administration, UAPD, has been very supportive, responded very quickly, would make sure we had everything we need, provide student additional supports for students. And that's really our main focus here is, yes, there's a lot of work to be done. How do we help our students feel safe, help our students feel supported, and let people know that this is not what usually happens here, but that doesn't mean it doesn't need to be addressed.
Exactly, exactly. And can you talk a little bit about how Bama Hillel serves that purpose to reach out to these Jewish students at this time and support them?
Yeah, well, we have reached out individually to students. We've posted emails and social media that we're here for them. We are a safe space. We are open and honest with our communication with our students. And a lot of times our students just need a place to share how they're feeling, and we're open for that. We were open all day yesterday. Our students made challah in the kitchen to prepare for Shabbat for tonight. So there is still a real sense of community and belonging and togetherness. We do have our Shabbat dinner tonight. It's at 5:30 at Hillel. And in addition to our student group, we also have a lot of support from our surrounding religious life community and student organizations who will also be joining us for Shabbat dinner tonight, just to show their support for the Jewish student body.
Okay, nice. So today we'll...
Yeah, so if y'all would like to join us, send me a text or email after the show, and we'd love to have you join us.
Yeah, we might definitely have to. Those are some great things to hear about. We do want to shift a little bit in talking about some other things, though, in just a second.
Sure.
Here.
So today we're remembering the tragedy of the Holocaust, right? But what are some of the hardships that we still see in the Jewish students' lives today?
And that's a really interesting question. And I would really kind of push back to ask the students. I can only speak for myself. And one of the things that that I think students face before they get here is really not knowing what to expect on campus. We have a diverse student body from all over the country and all over the world. And I think Dan alluded to, when you were speaking with him, kind of a past history of Alabama and the university. And when students and families come to campus for the first time, they are blown away by the support, by the Jewish community, by things that are in place to ensure that their students have a Jewish community and home on campus. What they face on campus, I have to kind of put that back and say, to ask them. I can share my experience. One of the things that I did see, and I know you just kind of go back to the talking, but to talk about support in general, is that I received a lot of pictures yesterday of the talkings, but a lot of the pictures I received also had what appeared to be water from water bottles poured over them. So a number of students, Jewish or not, have kind of told me, I was walking across the quad and I saw this and I just immediately dumped my water bottle on it. And they're so touching. That's what our students need to know, is that there are people who have different viewpoints, but there are people who support them as well. And those are the little things that students can do to be helpful, to show support. It doesn't have to be standing in the quad and shouting, "This is wrong," pouring your water bottle on a talking that. Not just anything that's anti-Jewish, but anything that's hurtful to anyone, is a message that we need to continue to share. I know I didn't really answer your question, but I'm going to push that back to the students.
Oh, that's great. That's great.
Another quick question is, how do you help, or what do you have in place that helps students celebrate their faith and their identity as a Jewish person?
As a Jewish Student Center, we celebrate all Jewish holidays. We celebrate Shabbat each Friday night, all the high holidays. We have Passover in the spring. And so really, if there's something Jewish related that students would like to do, this is a place where we can make it happen. We're also a place that, being open every day, that Jewish students can come with their, with other Jewish students, non-Jewish students, study groups, and use the facility to study, to have meetings, to hang out, to come get a snack. So really just, it's like a little mini community center on campus. And so that's really something that we try to say, is that it's not just about the event, it's about your daily living, daily Jewish life.
Great, that's great. That's great to hear how you're helping support what you're doing to do for the Jewish community in everyday life, and to celebrate these things, to not only defend them, but also to celebrate them. That's great. As we're sort of wrapping up here, is there anything that we haven't touched on yet, or that you'd like to bring to our attention about the situation, or about these things in general?
I really want to just send my appreciation to those who have reached out. Just the number of calls and texts and emails. If there's anyone I haven't responded to, I apologize. We'll get to you. Yesterday was kind of a busy day. But in addition to just monitoring events that were taking place, just the outpouring of support was really touching, and it is much appreciated. And as I want to encourage people to continue to check on their Jewish and non-Jewish friends, to check on each other as a society and humanity, and be kind to each other. And hopefully we can learn a little more compassion through this process.
Awesome. Well, Lisa, thank you so much for joining us remotely in the studio today.
Yes, thank you for having me.
Sure thing. This has been 90.7 The Capstone, The Morning Show. The Morning Show is still going on. We're here till 10. We've taken this hour to react to these recent anti-Semitic chalkings, and to remember and honor Holocaust Memorial Day, and support the Jewish community on this day, at this time, and moving forward. The Morning Show continues on next, but thank you for taking this time to focus on these things and to talk about these important issues. We'll be right back here on 90.7 The Capstone.
WVUA-FM, Tuscaloosa.
And we are back with The Morning Show. So, after this hour was dedicated to something very tough to talk about, but something very, very needed to talk about. And if you guys want to catch up and stay up to date, definitely check out this Crimson White. They're going to keep us updated with everything going further. So
yeah, they have a great article on there about all the chalkings around campus and things you can do to get things you can do to support the Jewish community around campus. But we're going to move on and just have a more light time here on The Morning Show.
Yes. So, let's get the weather going. It's 38 right now, and it's gonna go up to about 50 for the rest of the day. So it's gonna be cold.
Yeah,
not really a fan of the cold, if I'm being honest.
Sometimes the cold can be nice, though.
That's true. Mm-hmm. But I live in New Jersey, so the cold is like not fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, so.
I don't mind it when it's cold. I don't like snow.
Okay.
That's
fair. I like snow for, the first week. Mm-hmm. I like to do, the whole thing of, feel like a kid.
Yeah.
Look out the window, go sledding. But then when you got to shovel it, it's like, maybe it can go away for now.
Yeah, exactly. But recently here in Tuscaloosa, it's been super windy, which has made it even worse.
Because I bike to class, and miraculously, for some reason, I'm always biking in the way that the wind is blowing, and it's really annoying. It's starting to get very annoying.
Yeah.
So
walking to class is just, if you don't have a good pocket on your jacket or something, your hands are numb.
Yeah.
But yeah.
I mean, I've been trying to learn how to, bike without having my hands on the handlebars. So I can just put them in my pockets.
Yeah.
To varying effects. Mm-hmm. So, I haven't fallen off yet. So knock on wood.
Yeah, knock on wood.
So, yeah.
Um,
What else is going on in the world of UA? A basketball team just won against Mississippi State.
That was, were you at the game?
I was not at the game.
The game?
Were you?
I was.
Okay.
I was, and I went with a group of friends, and a bunch of them, because we were losing for such a long time.
Mm-hmm.
So a bunch of them were like, hey, I'm going to go. And I'm like, okay. And I was really debating on staying. And I was like, I feel like I got to see it out.
Yeah.
And like, I am so happy that I stayed.
Yeah.
Because wow.
Yeah.
Wow. That was a crazy game.
I was expecting, honestly, was not expecting such a close game.
Me either. We were all going in going like, this is going to be, we're going to leave at halftime because we're going to win by so much.
Like then, the LSU game where we're up by like 50 points at half.
And then it was honestly, it was scarier than I thought.
Yeah.
Way scarier than I thought. So.
Yeah.
But yeah, I was very happy. I mean, it's crazy that the games are free, if I'm being honest. It's very much, it's a nice thing.
Yeah.
Because as much as I love the football games, they are a little expensive.
Yeah. And also they kind of get boring after a while.
That is also, because I'm not a big football person. So.
Yeah.
Standing out in the cold.
Yeah.
Well, and you're just like, oh my Lord, can we just wrap this up? This,
yeah.
We're like, we already won.
Mm-hmm.
We're basketball.
Basketball sometimes can, and then you're inside too, so.
Yeah.
Was this your first basketball game this year?
Yes, it was. It was.
How was it for you?
I always, every time I go to a basketball game, I always feel like I'm watching, like, a video game take place. So it feels so weird because, I don't know, it's just, it's so high intense. I like basketball for, like, how, like, the high intensity of, like, you know, there's never, like, with football, I've, like, since I'm not that big of a fan, those down, like, moments where people are resting is very much like, like, I'm, like, checking the clock. But, like, I feel like with basketball, like, there's never a moment where I'm like,
exactly.
With, like,
football, I know what you mean. Because, like, I know I've been, I went to 3 football games this year, or last semester, and I went to homecoming, which we were winning 30-0 by, like, the start of the fourth, and the fourth quarter took, like, another hour. I was like, we could have ended this a while ago. It could have been done. We could have been, like, I could have been on my way home.
Yeah, yeah. And it just, it gets worse when you're, like, it's freezing.
Yeah.
And I'm going to be honest, but, like, I don't know how, like, you see shirtless people on the TV. I'm like, how are you doing this right now?
Yeah.
That, like, it's scary. Like, that's, you're doing a lot right now. So.
But, yeah.
All right.
We'll get into the next song here.
So the next song is You Need Me by O'Flynn and Fraser Ray. We'll be back on The Morning Show.
WVUA-FM, Tuscaloosa.
We're back with The Morning Show.
Welcome back, everyone.
So, Ryan, you have a nice article.
Yeah. So I was scrolling on Twitter the other day, and I saw this video come up of a drone video of a moose shedding its antlers, both of them at the same time, which is something you don't really see often.
Yeah.
Because usually they just shed one at a time or, you know, half of one.
Mm-hmm.
But this guy, Derek, I'm going to probably butcher his last name, but Derek Burgoyne. But he was filming out in the woods one day with his drone, and he comes across this moose.
Okay.
And he hits record, and 16 seconds later, the moose shakes his antlers off, which is pretty cool. I'll show you the video. But, yeah, and it's, like, almost a rare once-in-a-lifetime type of thing that you don't really, no one's really ever caught on camera before. Because they do it so sporadically or randomly, and usually it's only one or a half of one at a time.
Wow.
So it's pretty interesting, and it's a pretty cool story about, you know, this guy who has been, he has a YouTube channel, Adventure in the Wild, and he shares his recordings of, like, nature and such that he takes with his drone, and he has apparently loved moose and, like, the plural of moose is
Meese?
I think it's just moose, but okay. I'm not really sure.
It's one of those, like, the cactus situations.
Yeah. But he apparently has been, like, since he was a little kid, like, he's gone out into the woods looking for moose antlers okay. and trying to collect them because he just has always had a fascination with the animal.
Mm-hmm.
And so I found that really cool, and it was pretty... Noah Haynes just texted and said moose eye.
Okay, it's moose eye.
But I don't know if Noah is right on that one. Because I feel like I heard a Jeopardy question that asked what was the plural form of moose, and it was just moose.
I'm going to go with that one. I don't know. Moose eye seems a little...
Yeah.
A little wrong. Sorry, Noah. But,
yeah.
That's really cool. I didn't even know that moose shed their antlers.
Yeah. From Noah said 100% he's right, but
sure.
The debate is still up
yeah.
for that one.
We'll just agree to disagree on that one, Noah.
Yeah, but apparently it happens like once a year for them, and they kind of just like plant themselves into the ground, and then they shake all the snow and water off their body, and usually like an antler comes off because it should just grow and old. It's kind of like... I'm pretty sure from what I know, it's just like another, it's like a branch of a tree okay. that can just like come off
yeah.
after a certain period of time. Mm-hmm. So I think that was pretty interesting.
Okay. That's crazy.
Yeah.
That's really crazy. Okay. So, alrighty. Up next, we got Disorder by Joy Division. So stick with us. Here on 90.7 The Capstone.
WVUA-FM, Tuscaloosa.
And we're back with the morning show.
Welcome back, everyone.
So Ryan just told me that the Oscar nominations just came out.
Yeah.
So... let's go through them and let's see how we feel.
So I'm going to start with Best Picture because it's the biggest category. Okay. It's got like 10 nominations.
Okay, so what do we...
So the first one we have is All Quiet on the Western Front, then Avatar, The Way of Water, The Banshees of Inisherin, Elvis,
okay,
Everything Everywhere All at Once,
okay,
The Fablemans,
okay,
Tar, Top Gun, Maverick...
Ooh, okay.
Triangle of Sadness and Women Talking.
Okay. I've seen... is that it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Those are all of them.
I've seen a few of them.
Mm-hmm.
I don't... for me, I'm not big on the Avatar one. Yeah. I understand why, like, it's beautiful and all that, but, yeah. like, story-wise...
kind of basic.
Not really. Yeah, I wasn't really digging it.
Mm-hmm.
Same with Top Gun. It was more of like, I didn't see the first movie. Mm-hmm. I saw Maverick. But like, I wasn't really into the story part of it.
Yeah.
But the action was so good. Yeah. I could definitely see that one up there.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. For me, honestly, Avatar, everyone keeps trying to, like, make this thing, like, it's so culturally significant. It makes so much money, but it's like, do you really remember the plot of the first Avatar?
Exactly.
So.
I don't disagree with you there. I think Avatar is kind of, like, overrated.
Yeah. Oh, so overrated.
And they're making, like, three more, and I'm like, there's, like, if you can't make a second one, like, any more interesting than the first one, why are we making three more?
I think this is just an ego trip for James Cameron.
Yep.
And it's sad to think that, like, this is, like, what... because he was, like... I think he said something about, like, this is what I want my, like, legacy and, like, my last few years of filmmaking to be centered on. So I'm like, really? Like,
yeah.
You know, you did, like, the Titanic and all that, and, like...
yeah, and Terminator, and, like...
exactly.
You don't want that to be your legacy.
I would much rather end on something like that than, like... like, yeah, it's... oh, wow, it's such a beautiful series, but, like, nobody remembers the story. It's, like...
yeah.
But,
yeah.
Everywhere All at Once. I haven't seen that yet.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen a few scenes.
Mm-hmm.
Definite. That's a definite on that one.
Well, they're showing it tonight at CMX.
Ooh.
Like, it's only at tonight.
Okay.
They're putting it back in theaters.
Okay.
Everyone listening should go see that. It's a really good movie. If I go see it tonight, it'll be my third time watching it.
Okay.
I saw it in the theater once when it came out, and then I really loved it the first time I saw it, but mm-hmm. I didn't understand a lot of what was going on, just because I was just like, for some reason, was not in the headspace to watch a movie in a theater. And then I watched it over Christmas break on Paramount Plus, and it made a little bit more sense, but still, like, I just think you gotta have to like dig into that one,
okay,
and fully get it. But it's really good.
It's like about like what, like different dimensions of a person and
multiverse,
and
like it's about like family issues too, and like a lot of different things going on, but it all works and it's all pretty crazy.
Okay. I saw the speech that one actor, he got the best supporting role.
Yeah. Let me try and find his name real quick.
But that was a very, very emotional scene.
Yeah.
Emotional speech. Mm-hmm. I liked it a lot. And I'm really happy that that man is back in the Hollywood spotlight.
Exactly. Yeah, so I'll go ahead and jump into the actor and actresses categories.
Okay.
Because these are kind of the most controversial ones that I've seen on like Twitter and such. People are kind of upset / happy for some of them. I know like the actresses category, everyone's pretty happy with like the supporting category and most of the leading category, except for a few people, which mm-hmm. they left out. And they only do 5 nominees for these, which I don't agree with, because I feel like there could be more.
Oh, yeah.
But so for actor in a leading role, we have Austin Butler for Elvis, Colin Farrell for The Banshees of Inisherin, Brendan Fraser for The Whale, Paul Mescal for Aftersun, and Bill Nighy for Living. I've seen 4 of the 5, and I think they're all deserved to be on this list, to be honest. I was expecting, have you seen Nope?
No. I gotta get caught up on my film.
Yeah.
The recent, because I haven't watched movies in a while, so I'm going back.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to catch up, so.
I would suggest Nope should be, like, one of your next ones.
Okay.
Jordan Peele.
Oh, okay. Is it, like, Twilight Zone-ish?
Yeah.
Okay.
Very much so.
Okay.
It's really good, but I was expecting Daniel Kaluuya to get nominated here. I don't think I was expecting Paul Mescal for Aftersun. It's like an A24 film. Mm-hmm. He's really good in it, and it's a really good movie, but I was not expecting a nomination for him there.
Okay.
But I think it's really between Colin Farrell and Brendan Fraser.
I've heard some really good things about The Whale, so
yeah.
I definitely want to see it. I saw the hype around it, and I heard the story about how he came back, and I'm just like, that's awesome.
Yeah. I saw The Whale over Christmas break, and it's a good movie. Definitely probably won't ever rewatch it. It's like
one of those, like, you got to watch it once and, like...
And then, like, you're like, I understand what's going on.
Wow.
I don't need to see this again.
Yeah. Is it A24 too?
I don't know, actually.
Okay.
I feel like it might be in association with A24.
Yeah.
But... I don't really know. But I think Brendan probably has this one in the bag.
Okay. Okay.
Because he was great in it, to be honest.
Yeah, okay. It's either that or I feel like Elvis, because I keep hearing about how much... What's his
name? Austin Butler.
Yeah, I heard Austin Butler went through a lot to really nail the Elvis impression.
Yeah. And
so.
the Academy loves a biopic.
Really?
Yeah. Because Rami Malek won for Bohemian Rhapsody. Mm-hmm. And I'm pretty sure they nominated Taron Egerton for the Elton John biopic.
Okay.
So they do love like a music biopic.
Okay.
Especially like a kind of like... artsy biopic, which Elvis was crazy.
Okay.
But I'm going to move on to the actress in a leading role. We've got Cate Blanchett for Tar, Ana de Armas for Blonde, Andrea Riseborough for To Leslie, Michelle Williams for The Fablemans, and Michelle Yeoh for Everything Everywhere All at Once.
Okay.
I think these are great choices. I know a lot of people are not happy with Ana de Armas for Blonde. I don't know if you've heard about Blonde, but it's a Marilyn Monroe pretty much biopic slash fiction story. It's like a Netflix movie. And she's great in it. Yeah. She's really good in it, but the movie overall is pretty bad.
I see they got some not so good reviews. So what, like, fiction? Is that they added? Did they just add stuff?
Yeah.
Was it like? Am I getting this wrong? But wasn't it? Did they like add like horror elements or something?
It was like they tried to do horror elements. They tried to do like thriller elements too. They tried to put in pretty much every genre that they could. I'm pretty sure it's like a 3-hour movie, and like hour like two, they like there's like a CGI fetus, and it's weird. And it's weird, and it doesn't make sense, and it talks.
Okay.
So
what are they trying to do, like this Eraserhead type thing?
I honestly don't know.
So my thing is, like, so what's the point of the merit? Like, so
It's a biopic, but
they
like...
You just gave up with halfway through?
Yeah. Okay. I'm pretty sure.
Okay.
And
that's
so...
It's a little,
Yeah, it's just like it's not a good movie. It's very like sadistic towards Marilyn, and it's very like showing her trauma only, which is not really a good thing because we've seen that before.
Yeah.
But for me personally, I think honestly this we've only had ever like one tie in Oscars history, like way back in I believe like the 70s or 80s.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like Barbara Streisand and someone else when Barbara was doing A Star Is Born. But I think we could see a tie here this year between Cate Blanchett and Michelle Yeoh. They've really, like, over the award season so far, they've been taking the best actress kind of, like, back and forth.
Yeah.
So, and I would love to see a tie because I honestly think both of them are, like, phenomenal in both of their roles. And they're so, like, different that it would be... they're both two different roles, like way different roles that they deserve both an award because Michelle Yeoh in Everything Everywhere is comedy and Cate Blanchett and Tar is a full drama, like musical, not musical, but like it's about music.
It looks like, looks a little bit like Whiplash almost.
Yeah.
Is it kind of like?
It's sort of like Whiplash.
But does it follow the composer instead of the drummer? Okay.
Yes. And it's more about like this composer who is kind of not the greatest person in like today's society and cancel culture and all of that.
And just how she does like lives.
Yeah.
Okay.
And it's really good. I love that movie. I've seen it like 3 times and I just absolutely love that.
Okay. I will add that one to the list.
Yeah.
Okay.
Let's see. I'm trying to find what other good categories could we talk about. We can talk about... I guess we can do the supporting actresses, because these are... The supporting actress and supporting actors categories are actually, I think, perfect. Honestly, like, okay. I don't see anyone else besides maybe a couple people... in the actress category that I would have added, but I wouldn't take anyone away.
Okay.
So actor in a supporting role, we've got Brendan Gleeson for The Banshees of Inisherin, Brian Tyree Henry for Causeway, Judd Hirsch for The Fablemans, Barry Keoghan for The Banshees of Inisherin, and I'm going to butcher this name, but Ki Hu Kwan for Everything Everywhere All at Once.
Okay.
And I think he's probably going to take it. He's been getting all the awards.
Yeah.
And he's just phenomenal. I love him.
Okay. Yeah, I hope so. I very much hope so.
Yeah.
That's the one movie here that I know pretty well.
Yeah.
And I've seen a few of the scenes. I've seen the fanny pack fight, and I really like that one. It's really... I'm a sucker for, like... smart action, like you know, using props around you.
Yeah,
like more than like I really like Jackie Chan stuff.
So yeah,
it very much reminded me of like that style of fighting. Mm-hmm. So, I hope he takes it.
I really think he. This is like his year. I really see him winning an Oscar for this.
Okay.
And it's his first. It's his first big acting gig in like 20 years. He hadn't had a job since like he did. Like, well, he was in Indiana Jones. He was in the Goonies. Yes, like when he was a kid. So it was like he got famous from that, but then didn't really get anything after that. So it's cool to see him back. But moving on to actress in a supporting role, we've got Angela Bassett for Black Panther, Wakanda Forever. We've got Hong Chau for The Whale. Carrie Condon for The Banshees of Inisherin. Jamie Lee Curtis and for Everything Everywhere All at Once. And Stephanie Hsu for Everything Everywhere All at Once.
Okay. See a running theme with Everything Everywhere All at Once.
So Everything Everywhere All at Once leads the nominations with 11.
Okay.
They got 11 nominations overall, which is pretty good. I think the most, I think Titanic was nominated the most with like 14.
Mm-hmm.
So they're not too far from behind that.
Okay.
It's really this like indie film that like is just captured audiences.
Yeah.
But this... I love all of these performances, to be honest. I loved Angela Bassett in Black Panther, Wakanda Forever. Did you see that?
I did not see
that. Are you a Marvel person?
Oh, no. I'm sorry.
I'm not. I don't judge.
It's funny because me and my friends kind of had a whole debate like a few nights ago, like 3 hours of just like our gripes with.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know. I don't want to get into it, but I do have some gripes with the Marvel and DC, so...
This is getting a little overplayed.
Yeah, it's just, I think, personally, so, you know, it was very groundbreaking for its time, what they were doing, and I'm frustrated with Marvel that, like, they found their formula and they're sticking to it, and I feel like that formula is really going to be what, not kills it, but definitely, like... is the nail in the coffin that's going to start getting people to be like, come on. Like, let's, like, you're putting in so much money. Like, let's bring back that, like, the crazy stuff. Like, being the leader of, like, crazy groundbreaking films. So.
I agree. I think Marvel, honestly, just, like, I think they're trying to appeal to, like, the kids now more.
Yeah.
I'm saying that as, like, a 20-year-old.
No, I understand. I mean, that's what I feel like they're doing with Star Wars. Like, like, with the Book of Boba Fett, it's very much seems something like... It's a show that's, like, for kids and, like, to push products.
Yeah.
And I don't like that.
Yeah.
I don't like that at all.
But Angela Bassett's great. She's one of the favorites to win. It's between, honestly, it's between her and Carrie Condon for Banshees of Inisherin. But I really loved Hong Chau in The Whale. I love Hong Chau just in general.
Mm-hmm.
She was in Watchmen and The Menu that came out this year. She's really good in that.
Okay.
But I know the indie darling of this race is Stephanie Hsu. Everyone loved her in Everything Everywhere All at Once. She played Michelle Yeoh's daughter. Everyone's really cheering for her because she was like actually like imperfect in that role.
Mm-hmm.
And I know a lot of people don't really like Jamie Lee Curtis in this category, but I think she played like a really fun character in that. So I'm excited to see who wins and what happens.
Okay.
Yeah.
Should be fun.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that just about wraps up our time for the morning show.
Yeah.
So, I had a lot of fun.
Yeah.
I can't wait for next Friday.
Yeah. So.
WVUA-FM, Tuscaloosa.